In some ways, you guys are ahead of the game. You set up something called the Procurement Innovation Lab, the PIL. Talk a little bit about what it is and how it works.
Sure. So the Procurement Innovation Lab is an initiative that I've started to provide an opportunity for the members of our contracting community, especially, to come forth with any ideas, any suggestions that they have on how we can improve our procurement processes. Anything from how we develop our RFPs, to how we evaluate proposals, to even how we review our solicitations, how we review documentation. The idea being that we are the people that probably know our business processes the best and can come up with the best ideas on how we can shorten our lead time, streamline the processes, and improve how we buy. The Procurement Innovation Lab is not just, though, for the procurement community. It really is for everybody who's involved in the procurement process. So what we've done is coupled that with a series of learning events. We call them learning cafes, and we go out with webinars and conversations with members of the community, including program managers, component acquisition executives, contracting officers, where we bring them together and talk about the Procurement Innovation Lab and what we're trying to do. But we're really excited. It's something that I started under the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer to provide that ability for people to take risks. That's really what it's about. It's saying, let's take some chances. Let's try to do some different things and see what we can come up with.
I want to go back to the risk issue because I think that's one of the big bugaboos in federal procurement. But let me back up. When someone hears a lab, they think you have an office somewhere at the basement full of people who are banging away on computers. This is kind of a virtual lab, if you will, and it's set up how?
So it really is a virtual lab. What it is you bring me your idea. So someone will come to me with an idea. Say, for example, we want to do oral proposals and we want to do oral evaluations. Let's use that just as a far-fetched notion. And what we do is I have a couple of individuals that work in my office who will sit down and explore that idea, document, lay out kind of a step-by-step, how does this look? We bring in our legal counsel to partner with them and say, hey, let's take a look at this and see how this would work. Let's see what steps are in the process, what we think we can do, what we can't do. Is there anything we shouldn't do? What's case law telling us? And then we sit down with the person and say, okay, here's what we think we can do. Then they go back to their office and they process the procurement. And we're kind of looking over their shoulder, following them through the steps of the process to make sure they do it right. But it's really working through their office. It's not a bunch of people sitting in a room together or us taking over the procurement. We really want them to own the process. We want them to be invested in that process. And we want to reward them if it works. But if it fails, you know what? It belongs to me if it fails, because that's how we take risks.
And that is so key to give that top cover, because so many times when you talk to procurement people, contracting officers and such, and why don't they take risks? Well, it's because they don't feel like that when the IG comes knocking or when the GAO comes knocking or you get called before Congress, and who's going to step up and say, okay, I okayed that, we thought that was a good risk. Sounds like that's what you're doing in many ways. You're giving someone else the credit for the success, but you're taking the blame.
That's correct. I think that is the most important part. I believe that in order for us to improve the process, to streamline the process, to make the procurement cycle better and really deliver the kind of capabilities that we need to achieve our mission and to deliver that capability in the quickest form possible with the best possible interactions with industry, we're going to have to take some risks. And it's going to take leadership, the leadership of this agency. Secretary Johnson has said this. Deputy Secretary Mayorkas has said this. Our new Undersecretary Dio has said this. Our Deputy Undersecretary for Management has said this. All of us are invested in helping our people do a better job. And that means that we have to provide cover. And I believe that I, as the Chief Procurement Officer, have to step up and do that. And so I'm prepared to do that. And I think the more that I can encourage this innovation, the more that I can encourage our folks to take good calculated risks, because it is about taking smart risks. You know, we can't be careless. We are working with taxpayer dollars. It's about being smart in what we do, being careful, but also being proactive, because we're not going to learn if we don't take some chances.
The other key piece that I think is worth pointing out is when you say people come to us. Who comes? So is it just DHS headquarters, or could it be CIS? Could it be CBP, FEMA, whomever? And then who else is at the table? You mentioned legal. You mentioned your staff. You mentioned, obviously, the business owners and the procurement managers and the program managers who own the program. Is there anyone else at the table? And that legal piece seems so important.
So what I've done is tried to partner with our legal counsel here because I think it is important. They are key to the success of this because they're the ones that help us better understand what are the risks that we can take. They know the case law. They know the challenges that we confront every day. They know what the regulations tell us and what are the chances that we can take. And they can also help us understand what are the proper steps that we could take? Where do we need to do a little bit more documentation? They're a key player, and I've been talking to them since day one, in fact, when I came up with this concept. But anybody can come with an idea. Any member of the DHS family can come. Generally, we're targeting primarily like the program managers and the contracting officers because they're the key players in the procurement process, and they're probably the most significant people that have the ideas. They're the ones that live it day to day, and so they probably have the best ideas. But it's anyone out here can bring us an idea. In fact, one of the things that I look to be doing at the beginning of the new fiscal year is turning to industry and saying, you two will now play in the pill and bring us ideas. But I did want to start internally first to give our folks the opportunity to bring their ideas to the table. But I know that our industry partners have some good ideas as well, and I want to hear from them. And in fact, we've done a series of industry engagements where we're trying to learn from industry some of the things that they do out there when they're dealing with the other bureaucracies that are out there, the large companies, because they sell to each other. So the other partners that are at the table, primarily it's legal, but the CFO's office is there because they're an integral part of this process. Sometimes we have our logistics folks at the table. So it depends. It depends what the idea is, what the innovation. S&T is a key player. I'm talking to S&T about broad agency announcements because we want to bring in some of our non-traditional players. We want to bring in some new technologies into the agency. So we're looking at innovations in that area, how we get those technologies to the table a little bit quicker.
And I know I've seen you speak a couple of times over the last few weeks, last month or so, and you, every time you've spoke, you mentioned the partnership with Luke McCormick, the CIO at DHS. So I imagine he's your partner in crime, so to speak, at the table a lot as well. And then with FATARA adding that layer to it, that continues this conversation. I mean, so give me a sense. The pill started, obviously, because why? Because you saw an opportunity, because you saw Buyers Club success. Where did the idea come from?
So, as you know, I've been in this business for 34 years, and I've been both part of procurement community as a contracting officer, but I've also been a customer of procurement. And the pill really has been in the back of my mind for years. I've long believed that we have to create a space for innovative thinking for our procurement community. And as I've grown up in this community, I've seen us become a little bit more risk averse and becoming a little bit more uncomfortable with taking risks because of the challenges that are put before us. The number of protests have grown. We seem to see more and more that happening. I am no stranger to protests. I don't fear them. I'm comfortable with them. As I always tell my staff, don't worry about getting a protest, worry about winning it. That's what I care about. But as a leader in this community, I've long believed that it is up to leadership to create opportunities for people to take chances. And so I came into this job wanting to do this. It was probably one of the first things that I mentioned to my staff when I walked through the door. And partnering with my IT counterpart, Luke McCormick, was a natural instinctive behavior. I've long believed that IT is an integral part of almost everything that we buy these days. There isn't a program out there that doesn't have some form of technology in it. And so I started talking to Luke as soon as I knew I had this job. When I was at USCIS in my other roles, I was constantly partnering with my IT counterpart over there, Mark Schwartz, because IT is an integral part of our lives. It's a part of everything that we do. And I think we have to understand the IT community. We have to understand how IT is developed and sold. We have to understand how that technology works and how it fits into all the programs. And so I think there is a natural marriage there between the procurement and the IT communities. And so Luke and I are very close. We probably talk 2 or 3 times a week. We're constantly strategizing together, and we're constantly talking about how do we come together and better support our customers, the overall Homeland Security community.
So the pill has been set up just a short time. What are some of the initial projects? What are some of the initial ideas? And what's the rejection rate, if you will? Because everybody has ideas that they think can work. And then when you peel back the onion, so to speak, it's like, well, that's not going to work for these reasons. Or, wow, we never thought of it that way. That will work. Give me a sense of what you're hearing so far, at least from a high-level trends.
So we recently had 2 webinars, because the first thing is to educate folks on what the pill is and, you know, give them a comfort level on what kinds of ideas they can bring. You know, because when you first mention it, it sounds like almost too good to be true. If I succeed, I can keep it. If I fail, she'll take it over. People just don't believe that, right? They're going, she must be nuts, right? So we've had a couple of webinars, and quite successful, 200 participants from across the spectrum, so from all components and from all categories of labor. So that's been quite good. So we've had probably about 6 to 7 different projects identified to us, and we're exploring them. So far, we have not rejected anything, because we are exploring all the projects. We have 2 that are currently underway. One is a classified project, believe it or not. One of the first ones is a classified project, classified procurement, that's being done in an expedited mode, and it's well underway. And so far, I'm happy to report it's on track, and they're using some innovative techniques. And I should mention that some of the techniques are not necessarily, quote, innovative. It's not something new. They're just taking advantage of some of the tools that are already out there, but it's the combination of the tools and how they're using them that makes it innovative. So, for example, in this one, they're going to employ oral proposals. They're going to go to consensus evaluations as opposed to having individual reports written and then combining them into a consensus reports, and they're doing similar things like that. So that one's well underway. We have a couple of business processes that we're looking at that folks are exploring how we can streamline the process. So they're actually looking at what some other agencies are doing in a couple of areas, and they're coming up with some techniques on how we can streamline some business processes. So we have about 6 projects underway.
Generally speaking, how long does it take from idea to implementation when they come to you? Mm-hmm. Is it a week or 2? Is it 6 weeks? And obviously, it's going to be hard because certain ideas maybe will take longer and other ideas can be implemented more quickly. But generally speaking, you said you've done 2. You have 6 or 7 in the pipeline. Give me a sense of just the early, what you're seeing so far. And I guess the other second half of that, I keep asking these multi-part questions. Is there a goal on your end to say, we'd like to get through this decision-making process once we really get this up and running in a week, in a month, in as much time, no more than X amount of time?
So generally speaking, when somebody brings us an idea, if viability of the idea, generally within a week, because it shouldn't take us more than a week to say, yeah, that one looks like it's going to have legs. Then probably about another week to sit down with legal and say, do you see any obstacles to this? You know, the devil's always in the details. How well-baked that idea comes to us determines how quickly it goes. So if somebody comes to us and they've kind of laid out a game plan and say, hey, here's how I think this would work, we sit down and talk to them and talk through the process and say, how do you see this? How do you envision this working? So the more thought out the plan is, the faster it goes through. But we're looking at a 1 to 2 week cycle for us to say yay or nay to an idea. And I will say this, the nays are going to be few and far between. Because here's the thing. Really, the answer should never be no. It might be not that way. In fact, that's generally my philosophy about procurement. I've always told my staff, when a customer comes to you with a requirement, maybe we don't agree with that approach, but we're going to find a way to get it done. And it's the same concept here. When somebody comes to us with an innovation, maybe the idea is like a little far-fetched, and maybe we might have to, you know, put a little bit of a box around it, right? Because, yeah, you know, sometimes we do have to put a box around it. There are regulations out there, right? And some of our friends on the Hill might say, you got to put a box around it, right? But I don't think there's anything out there we shouldn't try, right? And so what I've told my folks, the guidance I've given them is before you reject anything, let's talk about it, because we just might be able to bring it down to a level or put some parameters on it so that we can still try aspects of it. So I don't think you're going to hear about any rejections per se. You just might see us break down a few ideas, because we really want to achieve success, and we also don't want to do something that's so outlandish that it might scare the world, because that's the other thing. We got to get people to buy in. We want to make sure that people are invested in it and buy into it.
One of the things that I wrote about recently was a new blanket purchase agreement that the GSA 18F put out about Agile. Mm-hmm. And the reason I bring it up is because I'm hearing some very similar discussion points. One of the things the folks at 18F said, we're not afraid to fail. In fact, we want to fail fast and move on. It sounds like you're offering that same message to your folks. How do they believe you this time versus any other time when people have said that? Because the fear of failure, again, going back to that risk piece, is so great.
Well, first of all, because I am a woman of my word. I have always stood up for what I believe in, and I not afraid to fail. I've failed before, and I've stood up and said, mea culpa, I failed, and I know how to fix it. And I stand tall and say, it's okay to fail. It's okay. That's how we learn. And anybody who's ever been successful knows they failed before. And I agree with that principle that our friends in 18F have come up with in the digital services group. We learn from mistakes, and we got to get out there. We got to try things. And when something doesn't work, we move on to the next thing. And so I'm out there talking about this. I have my groups doing these webinars, and we're going to try new things. And here's what I think. We're probably not going to fail, because nothing that we're trying is really that crazy. It really isn't. We're all pretty smart people, and we know the rules. We know the rules of engagement. Yeah. And we're also careful, because it still is taxpayer dollars, and I'm a taxpayer, so, you know, I'm a little bit careful about my money, you know. So we're trying things within reason, but we are going to try some different things. And, again, we're talking to industry, and we are talking to legal counsel, and we're talking to the smart people out there that know, you know, how to do these things. So we're not doing outlandish, crazy stuff.
In many ways, probably, and this is my guess, and tell me if I'm on the right track here, a lot of the ideas that come through the Procurement Innovation Lab are not, what if we had an unpriced BPA that could last 25 years? I mean, something you're just going, whoa. But stuff someone has been probably thinking about for several years, going, why wouldn't we be able to do oral presentations in a consensus way instead of individuals? Is that what you're initially seeing? Some of those, people may call them low-hanging fruit, but really just ideas that have been for a long time, but no one's been able to step forward to say, yeah, go ahead and try it.
Yeah, it's the things that people have been a little uncomfortable trying, because they are a little risky. Oral proposals are always risky, because you don't have all that documentation that you can hang your hat on. It's the things when you're combining, perhaps bringing together your evaluators and letting them perhaps get away with a little bit more of an outline of a report as opposed to a very detailed report. It's about getting people in a room together to have a discussion and documenting that discussion as opposed to everybody individually writing evaluations. It's those kinds of things. Those are ideas that have been around for a while, but people haven't tried them because they're worried that when they get before a GAO, maybe that won't fly. So they're not really that far-fetched. No, we're not going to do unpriced options because you can't. The regs tell us that, right? But they are about thinking about ways in which we perhaps write our requirements such that industry can be a little bit more innovative in how they propose and how we can take advantage of new technologies, how we perhaps more creatively lay out problem statements so that when we get proposals from industry, we can really evaluate solutions and not plans for solutions. You know, one of the things that I often get frustrated is we ask for a lot of plans from industry, and it becomes almost like a writing exercise. And I don't want to evaluate how well you write. I want to evaluate a real solution. It's about perhaps putting a little bit of money out there for industry to maybe present a portion of a solution, something that I can take and throw in a lab and test it. as opposed to getting written materials and then putting money out there. So it's about maybe advancing the technology and getting product to market a little bit faster.
And just going back to the M-Price thing, I know GSA is looking at the M-Price schedule, so maybe that will be an option for you in a couple of years from now.
That'll be okay.
Let's talk about the short and long-term goals for the Procurement Innovation Lab. Mm-hmm. You're just kicking off. You talked about some things in the beginning of the fiscal year. Mm-hmm. But what do you hope to get done, let's say, over the next year? And then where are you going to be in 3 or 5 years?
Okay, so my goal is to focus on streamlining the process and documenting those streamlined procedures. And the long-term goal is to continue streamlining, to continue to identify ways that we can continue to develop and grow as the markets are developing, growing. Technology is changing at a rapid rate. The economy as we know it is changing. The way we did business 10 years ago is not the way we do business today, and I don't believe that's the way we're going to be doing business in 5 years, let alone 10 years. And so we have to continue to develop and grow. So my long-term goal is that the Procurement Innovation Lab is really the way of the future. We're going to be constantly innovating and staying on top of what's going on in the world. We can't just rely on what we know today. Our folks have to continue developing and growing and learning from industry, from the markets out there, from the technology. We have to stay on top of things. No longer is it good enough for the contracting officer to just know the federal acquisition regs. They really have to understand what they're buying. They have to understand the industry they're buying from, the technologies that they're buying, and how those technologies are actually sold out there. So we have to be a little bit more well-rounded.
The one thing that occurred to me as you went through kind of your long-term goals is, where is all this information going to live? Do you have plans for a repository? Or are you going to take advantage of GSA's putting together the hallways, and are you going to take advantage of those things as well? How are you going to make sure that these lessons are learned and referred back to?
Sure. So definitely we're going to take advantage of the hallways that GSA is putting out there. I mean, we're a huge part of that, and we continue to participate with all of our fellow agencies. We believe in partnering with all the agencies and taking advantage of everything that we can do together as a federal government so that we become more efficient. But certainly we have our Homeland Security Acquisition Institute, and what we continue to try to do is institutionalize all our learning. I talked a little bit about our learning cafes. Our learning cafes are these small, very quick learning activities that we're providing. We call them learning cafes because they're very quick training sessions. Some of them could last a day, 4 hours, 1 hour, 2 hours. The idea being quick hit training that our folks can come to and learn some aspect of procurement. This is one of the ways that we're going to institutionalize some of these new innovative procedures that we're coming up with, because we think it's really important that once we come up with these innovations, once we come up with these best practices, we get out there and teach them very quickly so that we can get them spread out in our community. And I failed to mention that when somebody succeeds, they're going to become the champion of that. They own that process. We reward them by making them the champion of that process, and we name it after them, and they get to teach it, or we get to teach it for them, but under their name. So we want to make sure that we give credit where credit is due. But these learning cafes is one way that we will institutionalize. Our Homeland Security Acquisition Institute continues to come up with ways that we can better train our folks and get this, what I call, quick hit training out there to our folks in a distributed manner, through webinars, through these more distributed learning, distance learning approach, so everybody can participate and learn.
Earlier in our conversation, you talked about this idea for the Procurement Innovation Lab as something that you've kind of had in the back of your mind for several years, but the impact of, for instance, the HHS Buyers Club, mm-hmm. the impact of 18F, even though that's more digital services, but it is still a procurement shop in many ways, mm-hmm. the impact of OPM's Innovation Lab, for instance, as another example. Do you get a sense that this was just the right time to put this together and begin the process, or was it just a confluence of timing based on your needs here at DHS and as you got settled into your role as Chief Procurement Officer?
Well, I finally became the CPO, so, you know, it was like I could lower the hammer. No, just kidding. No, but I think it's the right time. I think the recognition is there that we just can't keep doing things the same old way. And I think all of us in the procurement community, all the leaders in the procurement community, recognize that we've got to make better progress. The old adage of we got to do more with less sounds cliche, but it's a fact. We have to be more efficient. We have to be more effective. And look, frankly, I've been at this agency since day one. The mission of this agency requires that we've got to be better than the rest, that we have to be more efficient. What we do is so critical to the American public, and finding a way to do it better and more efficiently and more effectively, to me, it's at the heart of everything that I believe in. And so becoming the CPO was something that, I'm honored to do, and to bring these ideas to the table and to come in and fight to get it done is something that I'm willing to do. And I will continue to try to think of ways to get it better and get it right and get it even more right,
Was this a hard sale? Was this a hard sell to your management? I know Undersecretary for Management Deo is fairly new, but I'm sure your Deputy Secretary Mayorkas was interested. I'm sure that you had other layers. And then pushing it down, if you will, I know you're doing through webinars, but getting the chief procurement officers at FEMA or TSA or whomever, even though they quote-unquote answer to you, we know DHS is a big agency with a lot of agencies with a lot of budget. How did you handle the manage up and manage down?
Selling it is not hard because everybody wants to find a way to get it better. I mean, certainly our customers want us to get these procurements awarded a lot faster, and anything that we can do to streamline the process is always welcome. As a customer of procurement, I certainly understand that. I've been on the other side of this, and I recognize that the customer side doesn't want to do all this elaborate paperwork. They just want to get the product delivered and get it in the hands of the first responders, the operators. From a leadership standpoint, anytime that we can solve problems quickly, that we can bring solutions to the table, well, then that certainly serves the overall purpose of the agency. So selling it is not hard. Creating believers is a little harder because they have to sell it within their own components. My counterparts, my heads of contracting have to sell it within their own components, but they're excited about it because, again, it's about giving them cover. And we have a monthly heads of contracting activity council, and I chair that council, and we talk about these things, and I'm very engaged with them on what they're doing from an operational standpoint and, trying to provide them support, not just from a procurement innovation lab standpoint, but just from day-to-day operational procurements, what they're working on, what kinds of issues they're having, how I can better engage with them and support them to make sure that we're making smart decisions. So I know that they know that I understand what they have to do, how difficult their job, having been head of contracting twice at this department. They know I get it, and so they know that I'm here to support them, and I believe that they know that I'm genuine and that I'm going to be here to support them. So I don't think it's a hard sell at all. I just, it takes time to develop legs and take off running. And we have a lot going on. We're in the middle of a fiscal or towards the end of a fiscal year. And this was a rough year. We got our budget late in the year. But I think everybody's excited and ready to jump on. We just recently did our cybersecurity clauses, as you know, and that's taken off very quickly. So everybody's on board.
You mentioned several times the getting believers, institutionalizing. One of the things that occurs to me is the idea of getting the champion. And I've heard that approach before where people say, once I can get a few people in, then they can spread it down into their agency. It sounds like you're taking the same approach. Where do you find those people? Are those the ones that are coming to you with the ideas? Or do you know that certain agencies, maybe you won't want to name them, are more innovative than others?
A little bit of both. Some people are coming to me with ideas, and I certainly know a few people out there that have some great ideas. Of course, I came from USCIS, where I was working with Mark Schwartz, who is one of the people that has been pushing agile development, and I worked with him very closely on several projects at USCIS. So he was one of the first people that I reached out to, and I know he has a couple of projects that he's discussing with us. We had a couple of projects in the work for some of our other components. So it's a little bit of both, but I certainly reach out to folks and talk to them. I've been visiting some of our customers and talking to them and asking them about projects that they have coming up that they would like for me to consider. I ask them about ideas that they have. You know, what do you want to see done differently? What would you like to see? You know, you've experienced this process. Tell me what you like and what you don't like. Some of the best ideas come from the bad experiences that people have had, or the, I shouldn't say bad experiences, not so good experiences, or where they thought something went slowly. Even in talking to industry, sometimes I've gotten some really good ideas where they've had some not so good experiences, where they thought something was a tad tedious. They had to do, you know, too much writing, or they felt that information they gave in a proposal wasn't really useful. So ideas come from different places. So it's a little bit of reaching out, but some people are coming with some really good ideas. And it's coming from all over the place. It's not just the headquarters process. It really is coming from components as well.
Several times during our conversation, you mentioned industry. You mentioned that in the fiscal year, you're going to look to industry for ideas. Talk a little bit about how you're going to pull those ideas from industry. When I've seen you speak over the last month or so, you've talked about reverse industry days. You've talked about the RFP, RFI process. Give me a sense of their involvement, and when should they expect to be involved? Because I'm sure you'll get calls right away.
Sure. So, well, industry knows they don't have to call me because I'm out there talking to them all the time. So I think you've heard about our Acquisition Innovations in Motion, it's an initiative that we started that ties back to the Unity of Effort initiative that the Secretary has in place. And Acquisition Initiatives in Motion is a two-pronged approach. It's looking at improving our acquisition processes overall, from program management to procurement, as well as enhancing our industry engagements. And it's looking at industry engagement from several levels. It's looking, I like to break it down into three areas. It's looking at major industry engagements, requirements-based industry engagements, and learning engagements. Major engagements are your strategic level engagements, where we're talking really about strategic objectives of the agencies, challenges that we confront, major problems that we're trying to solve, cross-component activities. Requirements-based are really like your procurement-based engagements, where we're talking about initiatives that we have ongoing and procurements that might be coming out or requirements that we're looking to address. And then there are the learning events. Learning events are where I'm learning from industry or industry is learning from me. I believe that all too often we spend a lot of time on requirements-based engagements, but we're not really understanding each other's business processes. So to that end, we are hosting a series of engagements, and we've already started. One that started before my time, actually, through my predecessor, was debriefing. We engaged with industry. We brought industry in to help us craft better debriefing approaches, and we created training where it's role-based training, and our folks actually engage in role-playing, and industry actually participates in that training, and they assess how well our students are doing in that role-based debriefing approach. And you're familiar with debriefings. It's when we're telling how well they did on their proposals. It's been very successful. Industry, and then what we did, not only did we create the training based on their feedback, but then we brought industry back in to tell us how well we're doing. Have we improved in the process? And similar to that, we just recently, about a month ago, did another event on RFIs and RFPs and Fed BizOps announcements and our acquisition planning and forecasting system, where we brought in about 120 industry reps along with about 30 federal reps, and we created a series of roundtables, four roundtables, one on major procurements, one on IT procurements, one on small businesses, and one on R&D. Yeah, sorry, on R&D. And it was four roundtable events to talk about those four areas, RFPs, RFIs, APFS, and FBO announcements, and to talk about what works, what doesn't, what industry likes in those documents, what they don't, what we could include more of, how they use those documents, what kind of information we should or should not include. And it was a very worthwhile event. In fact, the ratings on that were well above 80% favorable, because it was a true roundtable discussion where I had a good mix of government people. It was not just contracting folks. We had program managers. We had IT folks. We had CIOs, heads of contracting, a really good mix sitting at the table with industry, and it was a conversation, and we were learning from one another. And industry learned a lot about why we do things the way we do, why we use the vehicles that we use, and we learned a lot from them about how they perceive and how they read the materials that we provide to them and why they ask some of the questions they do. The next one that we've got coming up is our Reverse Industry Day. We hope to be hosting that probably in August. And actually, we're not going to host that. We've turned that over to industry, if you will, to industry associations, and asked them to take that over. And it'll probably be partnered with a couple of other agencies. And that Reverse Industry Day is so industry can educate us on their decision-making process. What motivates them to bid or not to bid? What are the factors that motivate them to consider pursuing a particular opportunity in the agency, and what kind of information do they look for? How early do they look for that information? What kind of information do they need? How often do they want to meet with the government? Because we're really trying to understand how we need to make ourselves available, what kind of information we need to make available, because if we understand that, then we know how to better engage with industry. So our goal is to understand each other, understand each other's business processes, and hopefully create a more meaningful communication. I mean, I think we dialogue well with industry. I think DHS is one of the agencies that's really out there talking to industry. Not only do we host events, but we actually participate in a lot of panels and activities. But I want to make sure that dialogue is really meaningful, that it's really a good exchange of information and not just us presenting to them or us throwing information about requirements. It's really about learning from one another.
And just real briefly, what other agency do you hope to partner with the Reverse Industry Day? Do you know yet?
Definitely Office of Federal Procurement Policy. I definitely try to engage with the administrator there, Ann Rung. I think she has some very good ideas. Our friends at General Services Administration, and hopefully a couple of our other counterparts out there.